Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 19. I almost said 18. 19 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. And we are just really excited to be both getting back in a routine. It's not technically fall yet, but we are both in our, you know, fall academic year routines now, and it feels good.
And back to recording.
We took a little time off.
Only 1 week off of actual episodes, but I think 2 weeks off of recording.
Yeah, and it felt like a long time.
I know.
In fact, I think I texted you on vacation and was like, wait, how many episodes are we going to miss? And it was just one because we had doubled up. But
It
felt like a very long time, and I missed talking to you, Sarah. So
one of our listeners said it felt like not a normal week without us.
Aww, I thought it was very sweet. That's really nice. That is very sweet. Yeah, that's nice to hear. And I have to say, we are both just getting it together. I am especially just getting it together. So we don't have a sponsor this week because, hey, I've been like checked out for like essentially the last 3 weeks. But you know, now I've got that rush of energy that you get at the beginning of the school year. So we're going to hit this hard.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn it over to Sarah now, and she's going to introduce the Instagram segment and all that good stuff that she does.
Yes. So today we are talking about, our main topic is going to be
I should have mentioned that, right?
That's all right. Things that we wish we would not have freaked out about as new moms. So we promised you guys who are newer moms who are listening, we define newer as the first 2-3 years of motherhood. We promised you some shows dedicated to kind of newer mom topics. And today we're going to be both sharing some things that looking back, we wish we would not have been so stressed out over. And I think it's going to be really fun. I think we have very different things that we
maybe not as different as you think.
I know, we always say that and then we're like the same.
Yeah.
But before that, I thought we'd catch everybody up on what we've been up to, and we like to do that through our Instagram streams because it's fun, and then we'll share those pictures with you guys at themomhour.com if you go over to the show notes. So, Megan, did you find a photo in my stream that caught your attention from the last
I found two.
Okay.
So the first one is probably not going to take that long to talk about. So it was a letter, obviously, from one of your kids.
Yes.
From your secret admirer.
Yes. Oh, yes. My secret admirer. I think in an early episode, we talked about how much we both love phonetic spelling.
Like right. When kids yes. are learning.
Yes.
So that very bummed that Claire is almost done doing that with a lot of words. She hardly does it at all anymore. She got
too
smart. Does
she spell correct?
You know what it is? She's too afraid to spell things wrong now.
Oh, that's
interesting. She used to not really care, and she would just.
Right.
So now if it's a word she doesn't know how to spell, she'll ask for help. And sometimes I'll refuse just because I want to see how she would spell it on her own. Or she'll use a different word. Like she's a lot less, she doesn't take as many risks anymore.
Which, that's interesting.
I do think that's interesting. Kind of sad because she had the most adorable misspellings. But anyway, tell us about your misspelling.
Yeah, so I got a little note from my secret admirer. I think it was spelled E-D-M-I-E-R-E-R. Like perfectly phonetic.
Yep.
But it was handed to me in person, so it wasn't very secret. But that was a cute one from my Instagram stream. So that was my 7-year-old, second grader.
I figured, but I didn't know if maybe Reed was a little bit advanced for.
He's a kind of an advanced reader, but he's not very interested in writing or spelling.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's not always the same. It's not always the kids who like to read are not always the same ones who like to write.
Right.
And vice versa. So exactly. It's interesting.
Yeah, that was cute.
And the other one, of course, was Violet in her adorable, I want to say purple or is it pink cast?
She's had two already.
Okay.
So she fractured her elbow, the last week of August. It's been like 3 weeks. And in a bounce house, in a pileup of her older siblings.
Things freak me out, man.
That's like a metaphor for being the youngest.
Right.
Everyone falls on top of you and you break your arm. It was, I'll keep it a very short story, but it was very sad because we went to urgent care that day. We could tell it was, you know, not just a bump or bruise. But the urgent care we went to was not great. And they did do x-rays there and they came back and said the x-rays didn't show any fractures. So just to keep an eye on it and go see an orthopedist if it didn't get better, which it didn't. So it was 5 days of walking around with what turned out to be a fractured elbow. And I've since talked to so many moms who are like, oh yeah, my kid had a broken leg for a week and we didn't know. So I don't feel so terrible about it. But now knowing that she was, and she did pretty well that week. I mean, but she just wouldn't use her arm. It was like a right. little broken wing. So then at the orthopedic doctor, we got good x-rays, showed a fracture, luckily no surgery. So we were just back there today. Everything's healing well. So it could be as soon as 2 more weeks in the cast. But to all of you guys who've had small children in casts, this is my first. 3 kids, no broken bones until this one. So it's she's doing great with the cast, but some of the appointments with holding her still for x-rays all that have been pretty traumatic. So
that's terrible.
Have you guys had any casts?
No. You know, that's amazing. So funny. I should be knocking all of the wood. I'm knocking all of the wood around me right now.
All of the wood.
All of it. We went a very long stretch without having any ER visits, like any. And then what ended up happening was I think Isaac was the one who set it all off. He split his forehead open when he was about 10 on a granite countertop.
Ooh,
he and Jacob were screwing around in the kitchen, supposed to be doing the dishes. And all I remember is him coming upstairs with his hands over his head going, blood, blood, blood. And I was pregnant and all the kids were like under the age of 11. Mm-hmm. And John was working out of town. But luckily, my sister-in-law was there. So she looked at it for one, Jenna. She looked at it because that was the first thing I couldn't do. And then she stayed with the kids while I drove him to the ER. But it was so funny because she just kind of glanced at it. And then she folded his hands back over it and just looked at me and shook her head. And I was like, okay, we got to go. Yeah. So she didn't freak out. She didn't freak me out. But it was like, anyway, that kind of kicked it off. And then after that, we had like a lot of weird things, like the time that one of my kids, who shall remain nameless, I thought was had to have his appendix out. And it turned out he just had to poop.
Oh, yes.
Which he did in the ER and then came out and was like, "Welp, all better." I mean, after he'd gone through this like battery of tests and everything. A couple of our kids have their, you know, breathing just kind of goes to wheezing every now and then, like not every cold, but maybe once a year a cold will just, and it's always like on a holiday weekend on a Sunday, I swear. So So anyway, just stuff like that. But no, none of it has been cast or like a broken wing, and I never got a broken bone as a kid either.
I didn't either. I had to ask them, like, what does this feel like? You know, because she's very verbal. She's 2.5, but of course, thank goodness it wasn't worse. Surgery, so little Violet in her broken wing, and she's like as crazy as ever. I think there's another Instagram in that stream the next day. She was trying to climb a tree and looking at me, being like, "Why can't? What do you mean I can't climb a tree?"
I think that might have been when I was on vacation, because I think Jenna showed me that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So over to your last couple of weeks. I'm looking at all these great pictures, but the one I love is you and Clara fishing on the boat. So tell us about your vacation, your end of summer vacation.
Yeah. So we did I would say this is our first real family vacation where it had nothing to do with work, because we've done a lot of travel and I've had a lot of great opportunities to do trips with the kids for blogging and stuff. But you know, it's different when you're traveling and you have a story to write or something, like you have to blog about it or something. It's different. I would say it was our first real family vacation that was more than a couple of days. Mm-hmm. It was just our family. And it was the kind of vacation where we did nothing. Like we got a cabin up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and we just hung out for 6 days. That's all the kids would just, and it was on this inland lake where the water was really shallow, far out. And then there was this big sun deck overlooking the water. So I could be anywhere on the deck and see the whole lake, because it wasn't a very big lake. And there were pedal boats and kayaks and canoes and like a little motorboat we could use. And
did you have good weather?
It was fantastic.
Oh, that's so
great. The weather was beautiful the whole time we were there. So the kids would just go out fishing every day with John. And sometimes I'd go and sometimes I'd stay back and putter around the little cabin. And, you know, sometimes I'd just lay on the deck and read magazines. It was fantastic. And so that picture was, I think maybe our second to last night, and at dusk, John took me and Clara, because he'd been taking the boys out a lot.
Right.
But he took just Clara and I out, and we fished, and Clara caught one. I did not. I'm not terribly patient.
I was going to ask how everybody did with fishing.
The first 3 days were a total bust. We didn't get anything, and all these other people on the lake were like, "Oh, this is the best fishing lake. You'll catch hundreds of fish." And we're like, "Maybe there's something wrong with us." But then the last day, John kind of figured out where to go. Found the spot, and they were catching them so fast. I mean, they were just throwing them back. They were like catching, throwing. Yeah. And then we did try to, like, the kids really wanted to eat one. So John said, okay, you know, we have to fillet it and everything. And so we filleted one, and that was enough for them. And then so they took the rest and then let them all go. Clara caught one. I like to reel. I mean, I like to cast and reel, and the kind of I guess the kind of rod I was using, that's not the way, or the bait or something. I don't know. I'm okay. Not really sure. That's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to just put it in and sit there.
Oh, interesting. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's not really my, I'm a little more action oriented than that.
Well, that's what I was thinking, is even kids, like in these day and age, things are, you know, you don't do a lot of pastimes where you just sit and wait. So I was curious.
Well, and when it was all, one time we all seven of us went out on this boat and it was not that big. And so John wouldn't let anyone cast unless he was standing right there, because it was, that would have been a disaster. And if two kids had tried to cast at once, we would have all gotten hooks in our eyes. It would have been terrible. So John would go around,
piercings,
try not to rock the boat.
Facial piercings that you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Try not to rock the boat too hard. And then he would help someone cast, and then we'd all sit there. But that was fun because we were all talking. And I think that was the fun of it, was just kind of sitting on a boat together, talking and, you know, looking in the water and trying to figure out. And all kids are different. I mean, some will sit there, like Owen will sit there till the bitter end. Mm-hmm. And he'll keep going back. He's so, and then Isaac kind of lost interest after like a day. Like, it was like, hey, when you find some fish, let me know. I'll be over here. So we fished all day and swam. And then at night the kids would play chess and checkers. And
I love it.
John would do what I like to call fire ranching. He's very into building fires. And he would start his fire like around five and then basically just work on that for the rest of the day. And we would just sit around the fire. It was fantastic.
Best. I love it. That is great. Well, we'll share that picture and link to the whole rest of your stream. And before we launch into our main topic, just if you are a newer listener, everything we talk about is at themomhour.com. This is episode 19. And we'll put those pictures up and everything else we talk about in this episode at themomhour.com.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad you guys are back. I feel like we were cut off from each other for a while.
I know. It was kind of sad. And I had very little cell service, which was fantastic. I didn't need it, but it was a little frustrating because I wanted to upload pictures and stuff and I couldn't, I couldn't make that happen. So, but it was nice to be a little disconnected and
definitely.
So, very relaxing. And I came back ready to hit the ground running for the school year.
Yeah, I think we're all ready. People's kids are still trickling back in this second week of September, but I think everybody's ready. All right. So today's topic, again, is things we wish we wouldn't have stressed out about so much when we were new moms. So I have no idea what yours are. I thought we'd each do about three, since we have a tendency to talk forever. And yeah, just we've gotten a lot of emails from newer moms who I'm so thankful that they're loving the show, because we have been talking definitely about more school age kid issues lately. So this one is all for the new moms, and hopefully some of those more experienced moms will share your feedback with us too about things you wish you wouldn't have freaked out about. So do you want to kick it off, Megan, or do you want me to? I'm good.
Well, I think that actually maybe our first one is the same. And I think it's something that everybody can relate to.
Okay.
So your first one was breastfeeding, right?
Yes, and specifically pumping. So I'll share, and then maybe yours has a different slant. So I went back to work after 3 months when I had my first baby, but I was fortunate enough to work a 50% part time. So I worked two long days in an office, full 8 to 5-ish days, and then I kind of flexed the rest of the halftime over the course of the week at home. So really I only had two full office days and two full childcare days to worry about. But the part of breastfeeding was fairly easy for me in the beginning. I mean, the usual like bumps in the road, but nothing too stressful. I liked it. I was committed to it. And started like introducing bottles, and that went fine before going back to work, you know, everything by the book, like made sure she'd take a bottle. But the pumping part was where I got a little bit hung up on the details. And you can probably laugh, Megan, because you know me and I am a details person. So I can sort of get like overly stressed about them sometimes. But I think with the pumping, the main thing I wish I wouldn't have stressed out about was how much I was producing in a day of pumping, how much I was sending to daycare, if that was enough for her. I mean, I'm talking about like looking to the ounce level on what I was pumping and the ounce level of what I was filling up to send, and trying to pump on the exact schedule of when she would really in real life be having a bottle at daycare. And you know, when you read the guides, and those are the guidelines they give you, certain things I'm able to just kind of internalize and walk away from, but certain things I just got, and we all do this, got like married to those recommendations to an absurd degree. So I just remember feeling really stressed about producing enough. In the beginning, she was only 3 months, I was still producing a lot, but I would say after 6 months, and she started a few solids, and there's kind of that natural, I think, reduction in supply in that 6 to 9 month mark, which would have probably been a sign that she was just drinking a little less, or I was getting more efficient in production, but I was like so dead set on sending 3 6-ounce bottles to daycare. So 18 ounces and like to the line, you know, and I wasn't doing it in a day of work in 3 pumping sessions. So then I would try and make up over those other days I was home. And I guess that's a long way of saying it just, those ounces didn't matter as much as I thought. I could have either sent less. I could have supplemented with a little formula. I just could have asked daycare, like, hey, is it, you know, is,
hey,
she,
is she even finishing those bottles?
Yeah. I guess it wasn't daycare that first year. The second year it was daycare. It was my mom one day and then we had a sitter the other day. But anyway, so that's, I'm sure everybody can relate to something that they just fixated on to a degree that you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, like how much time did I spend trying to eke out, literally eke out like another ounce?
So, well, you know, it's funny. Okay. So, you know, you and I are very different when it comes to being that detail oriented about things, but I was the same way about pumping. So with my first, Jacob did not nurse easily. He was a little sleepy at birth. Like he just didn't really latch and I didn't really get a good chance. I didn't get a good handle on it while still in the hospital. So by the time I got home, you know, he just wasn't really hitting it hard. Wasn't really working out so great. So I started just pumping because it was easier and feeding with a bottle, which kind of sends you down this downward spiral because it's really hard to maintain your supply.
And you know, I think a hard part with that is you know how much you're making. So it's easier to obsess over it. When you have nothing to look at, you're like, well,
whatever. Exactly. And also the other thing was, you know, I suddenly had this baby. I had a burst of energy. Because I wasn't really a super tired new mom. I mean, I was 20 years old for one thing, for goodness sakes. I could have been partying all night at that age and would have been okay. But also I just suddenly had all this energy and this focus. And what I did was I obsessed about how many ounces I was able to pump. That's like where I put all of that energy into my project was the pump. Mm-hmm. And so it took a long time. I think I pumped almost exclusively for like 2 weeks until he got a little more mature and was able to kind of figure out nursing. And then it got much more normal after that. But for those first couple of weeks, first, you know, 2-3 weeks, I had that, you know, they have those charts in the books where they tell you how many ounces a baby of what size should be taking during what time period. But again, like you might pump 3 ounces, but then the baby takes 2.5. Well, in a baby, a little tiny baby, like that half ounce is, it's a lot. I could have saved that to the next and added it in, but I'd be like, I felt like I had to have a fresh 3-ounce, you know, supply. Well,
they scare you about, you know, the health concerns and not that they, I mean, it's obviously good to know what milk is safe to save and all that, but that's another thing that's real easy to get obsessed over.
You know, it is. Sanitation. Well, and I will say, I think that we're a little hyper vigilant about that a lot of times. Like, I think that honestly, and I have some issues with La Leche League, materials in tone sometimes. I don't think they're always terribly reassuring as far as like, I think sometimes they make people freak out more than anything else. But I will say, I always appreciated how kind of like, they were like, look, you know, breast milk is like a living thing. You know, it can sit on the counter for up to 8 hours.
Right.
So don't worry about taking that half ounce that's left over and mixing it in with the next feeding if it means your baby's going to be full and you're going to be able to relax. Right. I mean, it's not as big of a deal as we're all making it. And I kind of appreciated how they were a little more, made it a little more easy to make that work. And so anyway, I mean, it was one of those things where it was so counter to my personality to do that in the first place. So it made me miserable to be like so on it like that. And so I'm really grateful with the rest of the kids. It just worked out that I never literally, I mean, I had pumps and I would use them like if I was engorged.
Yeah.
But I never like after that. And also I think with future kids, I realized like, you know, unless it's a tiny little baby, like if I had to go someplace and my baby was going to be gone away from me for 4 hours, even if at home I would have fed them after 3, it was probably going to be okay. I probably didn't need to worry about pumping a whole 3-ounce bottle or 4-ounce bottle for that hour. Like, you know, their caregiver could probably figure out a way, as long as they were a little bit older, to make it okay.
Yeah.
So yes, all those things that were, the breastfeeding thing was a big freak out for me for the first baby. For sure.
Definitely. I think that's a universal one.
And we also did end up switching to formula pretty early. And actually, I wish that I had been a little more relaxed on myself about supplementing.
I do too. I was so all or nothing about it.
Yes, that when I first gave the bottle, I was like, oh my gosh, wait, what? I mean, I can go to the store. And it was, so then it's sort of like, after that, it kind of went all bottle really fast. Whereas, you know, so I don't know. And with the other ones, they never supplemented, but that's because they were easy babies to nurse and it was never a big deal. So I think it depends a lot on your baby and your what you've got going on in your life besides parenting and, you know, and besides milk production.
And that's not your full-time job.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I also think that my other babies, it would just became, when they started solid foods, that just became, for some reason, it didn't click in my mind. Solid foods is another thing that I stressed out about. I don't know if I'll get to that one, but if you have a baby who's kind of in the second half of that first year and they're eating some solids, that's another way to buy you some major time, even if they still normally nurse every 3 to 4 hours. But if they are starting to eat, then they can have some kind of age-appropriate snack and go 5 or 6 hours. I don't know. Those little like tweaks in the system did never occur to me. And I think that's maybe one of the things about your first baby.
Well, you don't feel like you're allowed. You don't feel like you're allowed to tweak. Exactly. You're not allowed to improvise yet.
Right. Because you know no different. And you haven't yet realized that like they're fine. The kids are fine.
The other kids, it's all improvisation, which is kind of fun.
I love it. Okay, so what's your next one? Do you have a next one?
I mean, I think there's like obvious ones with little kids. I think sleep for sure. But it's interesting to me like how different the sleep thing has been for all of my kids.
Okay.
So for Jacob, you know, and I definitely leaned more toward like the attachment parenting sort of co-sleeping end of the spectrum. Not necessarily at first from a philosophical sense at all, but just because it felt more natural to me. It felt easier. It was what my sister did. She already had 3 kids by that point. It just seemed like the right thing to do. But I was really obsessed with making sure Jacob slept in a crib. And part of that was because my mother-in-law stayed with us for like the first week.
Okay.
And so that was a big thing for her. And so I was like worried about it all the time, but then he'd fall asleep on my chest and I'd be thinking, oh my gosh, I have to get him in that crib somehow because he's not supposed to sleep on me. You know, that was something that gave me a lot of stress because he startled really easily.
Mm.
And so laying him down. And also we had one of those really low, I think we had like a porta crib. We lived in this tiny apartment and, you know, getting a baby into like a crib at ground level.
Yeah.
When they're easily startlers is almost impossible.
Yeah.
Because you have to lean all the way and I'm postpartum. Right. So it's not like I'm able to really lean all the way down.
I can't do that like anytime.
So, you know, it just was kind of a big old cluster. And I ended up, I think at some point I just kind of gave up and said, screw it, I'm doing what I want to do. And it was totally fine after that. But it was like getting to that point where I gave myself permission to just do what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. That was the clincher. Now, interestingly, William, who was my third, I freaked out about him because he slept too much.
Mm-hmm.
He slept like 5 hours at a time and it freaked me out. So you just can't win. And I wasn't even new mom by this point.
Right.
I was just presented with something new. I'd never had a baby who slept.
Right.
And so I'd be, you know, sitting here, I'd be working in my house. I do credit his napping habits with my writing career because that's when he was really getting off the ground. And I really did a lot of work when he was a newborn because I'd be kind of just like resting in bed with my laptop in my lap and he's asleep and he would just sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep. And so, and finally I'm thinking, should I wake him up? I mean, is this a problem?
He's still a good sleeper. I'm curious.
He's a great sleeper and he'll nap. I mean, he knows when he's tired, he puts himself to bed.
Yeah.
He's taken a nap every day after school this week.
Oh.
And then he still goes to bed on time. I mean, he doesn't always want to go to bed now when I tell him to, but he's also really good about getting himself up. I mean, from birth,
he was
good at regulating his own sleep.
Really soundly, really like a quality sleep.
Yes. Like he's just out and he just is like that kid. I mean, he's a little different from the other kids in that way, but he's just that kid who just needs, he knows what he needs. He needs to like hibernate like a bear. And, and then he wakes up pretty good in the morning. He's now just to fast forward all these years. He's now the earliest riser in the house because he's the middle school kid and he's the only one who has to take a bus.
Okay.
So he has to be on that bus by 6:45 or something. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
And with all the other kids, this was torture for me, middle school, because I would have to be like blasting them out of bed and it was terrible. Yeah. I haven't even woken up until he's been leaving the last couple of days because he just gets himself up and he'll come to my room and say, you know, mom, you got to get up now because I got to get the rest of the kids up. But as he's leaving and
that's
he just says goodbye and he's on his way. So he wakes up to an alarm. He's great. But when he's out, he's out. So he's just always been that way. So anyway, that's just another thing. Did you also, was that one of
yours? Yeah, so sleep is one of mine, but from a totally different place, not even the newborn or like brand new baby stage. So Those who know me will laugh, but I'm pretty like stuck on naps and bedtimes for a couple reasons, just to defend myself. I'm not a good night person myself. You know this about me. Yeah. So I start to get tired when the kids get tired. And if my kids went to bed at 9 or 9:30, I would have no time after because I like to go to bed at 9:30. So that's one of the reasons. I've always been a pretty much an early bedtime person. And the naps allow me, because I've worked part-time from home since I stopped working outside the home, and regular nap schedules from whoever's a toddler at that time or preschooler have allowed me a couple of hours a day to work, which adds up to, 10 hours a week. And then I squeeze the rest in. So, and it's just my personality. I thrive on that predictability and routine. So the caveat is I don't regret that a pretty regular nap and bedtime schedule worked for our family, because it really did help me do a lot of things. It allowed me to work part-time. It allowed me to have time with my husband after the kids are in bed, and my kids are naturally early risers, so it gets them the sleep they need. But I will say that I don't even think I'm over this. I think this is still something I wish I didn't stress out about, which is like 10% of the time there's an opportunity to keep them up late or to skip a nap or to have them nap in the car because there's something fun going on or life presents itself. And that 10% of the time is where I really still deal with not major anxiety, but it stresses me out. And that I can look objectively and say, Sarah, that's just not that big a deal to keep them up late one night or to miss a nap. So again, it's kind of a case where there's a structure that helps, and then there's an adherence to the structure that makes you more stressed out than you need to be. So that one has always, and that's actually not a new baby thing for me, because I never felt comfortable with the idea of schedules for brand new babies, which is kind of funny because I then become very schedule oriented after, say, 6 or 9 months when they start taking like 2 naps a day, which for my babies wasn't, they were all catnappers. Nobody was a good daytime sleeper. So they were all catnappers till maybe like closer to 9 months. And when they were down to like 2 naps a day that you could predict is when I would have that moment with all 3 kids where I'm like, okay, well, if I can predict this, I want to use it to my advantage. And I would plan the rest of my day around 2 naps and then 1 nap, and I would not budge. I mean, I plan school pickups and social outings and work time, everything around naps. So that's okay. But I could have always stood to lighten up, and can still stand to lighten up a little bit about like the 10% of the time when it doesn't go the way I want. Does that make sense?
It's like healthy food, right?
You nap people, you crazy sleep people.
Well, it's not crazy to me. I mean, I think that works for you guys. And I honestly, looking back, I could have stood to be a little more structured about sleep for my own sanity. I think that for me, when they were really little, it didn't work for us for a lot of reasons. And I think a lot of times I would miss the window where it would be a good time to start getting things more structured. You know what I mean? And so like kind of once you miss that window, you're really kind of fighting.
Right.
You're kind of fighting against the tide. So it worked out fine. Some of my kids had more structure. Like Jacob's sleep was actually quite structured. He was the only kid.
Right.
So he took a nap at the exact same time every day, especially when I was pregnant, because I was tired too.
Yeah.
And then as I had more and more, it's like putting the work in for each individual kid started to become a little confusing to me. And I just kind of got overwhelmed by it all. Clara was also on a very regulated nap schedule, because she was the last and because the other ones were old enough where I didn't really have to worry about what they were doing as much. Like they were in school or whatever. So I could dedicate what I needed to get her to bed.
Right.
But I think when it was like that total chaos in the middle time, when I had all these small kids in the house and everything just felt very up in the air, it was a little touch and go there for a while. And I don't think that's crazy at all. I do think it's kind of like eating healthy food. If you're doing it most of the time and then it's okay to have a cookie at a party,
right?
Or 10 cookies at a party.
Well, and I think that's the place I didn't get to until probably this third kid, although I still have these tendencies. But I remember so clearly being at a family wedding when Allegra and Reed were 4 and 2, not even 4 and 2. So they were like 3 and 1. And we were with another family that had kids of very similar ages. And of course we went to the reception and we danced a little, but I just got itchy. Like it's kind of like, and I'm sure people can relate if you're like me, it's honestly, I thought they were going to turn into monsters or pumpkins after 8:30. It was like, I couldn't handle, I didn't even know what would happen. Like, would they fall asleep at the table? Would they like start crying? Which is so funny because yes, maybe. Yes, probably. And who cares? But I never got to that point of who cares. And I remember this other family with like a preschooler and a toddler who, and we left because I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't bear the thought after a certain point. We stayed for as long as we could. And those kids were out till like 12:30, I found out. And they were fine. They were tired the next day, but they were like at a barbecue. So it's like, right. I really thought like something would, the world would end. And I say that in an extreme way for those of you who, so the kids are usually better than you think they'll be. You might pay for it for a day or two, but often that's worth it. You know,
hey, right. Just, you have to make that judgment. Like, is this event worth the potential, you know, fallout tomorrow?
Right. And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. And right. I guess what I'm saying is I wish I would have gotten to that point sooner where I saw that it just wasn't the end of the world. And I think like anything, if you practice that, getting out of your routine, whatever it is, you get better at seeing that it, you know, the kids do fine. The kids, that sleep structure is good for kids. It's not essential. If they are getting enough sleep in the bigger picture overall,
right.
It just doesn't matter if they go to bed late one night. So I'm saying right. that to you all, but I'm saying that it didn't.
It to yourself as well.
Yeah. It never really clicked for me.
Well, you know, Sarah, I think that you're also, you're emerging from that new mom period of your life. And I think because all of your kids are getting older at the same time, I mean, hard to believe, huh? Yes. They're all getting older. Not just the baby. When you and I were at that barbecue together, I remember you saying something after that about how it was the first time you were at like a big gathering where you really felt like you didn't have to work the whole time.
Right.
Like the kids were just kind of doing their thing. And obviously Violet still needs some amount of supervision, but they all do need some amount, but she still needs a fairly hands-on, but it didn't have to be you actively parenting the whole time in that way. Yeah. And so when, I don't remember if we talked about this on the podcast or not, but when Clara walked up and asked, can I have as many, like she was trying to get
treats. Can I have whatever
treats.
I want? Yeah.
She's like, she kept asking, and my kids are really good about asking permission, sometimes too good. Cause I'll be like, you don't have to ask me, you know, for an apple.
You can have a strawberry.
Go have a strawberry. But she comes up and she's like, can I have a cookie? And I said, yes. And then a couple, 15 minutes later, we're all hanging out, having a good time. You and me and Brian and John are talking, having fun. And she comes back up, can I have a cookie? Can I have another cookie? And I kind of put her off for a minute and then answered her. She's like, well, you know, can I just have as many as I want? Yeah. Like she was,
whatever
she was just preemptively trying to just
get the blank check.
Just like skip over this whole process. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, we're leaving in half an hour anyway. You can have whatever you want. So it was kind of funny, but it was just, I think when you have a 6-year-old, you can do that.
Right.
You know, when you have a 2-year-old, maybe that's just a recipe for disaster. Kind of the same thing with sleep. Like if you had a 1-year-old who, if they don't fall asleep at 10, will be up screaming in a hotel room all night, then maybe you don't have the same leeway you would if you had a 4-year-old or a 3-year-old who can kind of just deal. And you know what I mean? So I think that there's a lot that goes into play when you make that decision. And I certainly don't ever, even though I was at the complete opposite end of the spectrum, I don't ever think it's weird when people, you know, we don't want to leave because their kids need to sleep. Right. I do get a little, I think there's a smug way of saying that you're a stickler about sleep, and there's a smug way that people say it.
Yeah, there's a smug way to deliver.
Kind of implying that nobody else is and everybody else sucks, and I don't like that so much, but, you know, people can be smug about it.
Hopefully I'm not. I don't think I'm that way. I fully own that it's my own neurosis.
You've never come off as smug. I just think there's a funny way. There's a certain way that parents can be about a lot of things. And sometimes the we choose to do this can come across just as, hey, this is what we do. And sometimes it can come across as like, you know, we're really sticklers about sleep in our family.
Right. That's really important to me.
That's really
implying
important to me.
It's not important to you.
Exactly. So
no, and I think the last thing I'll say on this is that I was so tired for so many of those years that there wasn't a lot of fun opportunities that was worth any of the hassle for me. Does that make sense? Like,
oh, yeah.
I didn't want to be up till 10. I also didn't want to deal with a cranky kid the next day because I didn't have the bandwidth to enjoy those non-kid hours or those non-hands-on. So now that, like you say, I can go to a barbecue and everybody plays and I can socialize and this day will come for you too someday, new moms, then I can make those choices and accept the consequences because I'm less tired.
Yeah.
End of story.
I remember actually there was kind of like a moment I had a revelation when, and I am the person who wants to close the party down every time. I am the overstayer. I'm the last person gone. I mean, not every time, you know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I just don't want to go to bed. I'm having a good time. I do not want it to end. So I remember being really frustrated when, not so much Jacob, he was just the easiest baby, like all that stuff. You could just throw him in a corner and he would play and then fall asleep. It just didn't matter. But Isaac was tough. And I remember being at a family gathering and he probably really needed to go to sleep. And it was getting later, and all the adults, and it was my sibling. So I was on the younger end of adults, you know, but it was all my brothers and sisters and my dad and whoever else was there wanted to play cards. And I wanted to play cards. So I sat down with him in my lap and, you know, he's grabbing cards out of my hands and like, it was, so I played one round and I thought, this isn't even fun.
Right.
Why am I doing this to myself? Like, this is not a good time. I'm going to go see if I can put him down. And so I went and laid down with him and then I fell asleep. And actually the next day I was really glad I had just gone to bed. It was, I kind of had to realize that sometimes it's just not the night for me.
Right.
And with a toddler, it's not fun to try to play cards if they're the kind of toddler who grabs everything out of your hands and then wiggles and wants down and wants back up.
That's right.
What are we losing? You know, I'm making him lose out on his sleep. I'm losing out on my sleep for something that's not even fun.
Right. That's funny. You and I are perfect complements in this scenario because I'm the one who is like, peace out. I'm going to
see, I would have just given you Isaac and you could have gone.
I need people who are like, no, you're staying out.
Right.
You're a grown up. Like, okay.
I've done that. I've done that to you once or twice.
Yeah. It's good. all right. So let's move on. Do you have another one? I have a couple more. But
I have a couple more. I'm not sure if we'll get to them both. This one I'm going to say is kind of silly to think of it as something that one would obsess about. But I think that it goes along with baby equipment and what are you going to put your baby into?
Okay.
And by that, I mean, what stroller system are you going to get or what sling are you going to get? And the thing about not so much with stroller people, although that can be very confusing because there's so many kinds, sling people, like hardcore sling people can be very strident. Did you run into this at all?
You know, I didn't because I was not really in those attachment parenting circles in the beginning, although I kind of read up on the philosophy. So I didn't know.
Let you in on this. And, and also keep in mind that when I first was sort of introduced to this world, it was a pretty new concept. You couldn't just get slings anywhere. You couldn't just buy them.
You had to be in the...
They had to be ordered online or like these specialty boutiques. It was a counterculture. Yeah. And you could recognize other sling moms. You know, it wasn't a fashion accessory. Like if you saw another mom at the store or at the zoo or whatever with a sling, you were like, oh, you know, we're in the same club.
Right.
So with Isaac, I got a sling. It was great. I totally was sold on how easy it made getting things done, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. He was a huge baby. And within a couple of weeks, my back started hurting. Mm-hmm. And so then, and at this time we didn't have a lot of money. And so I went online and was trying to find out like what my options were and people were recommending all these different slings. But the thing that I thought was the thing that freaked me out about it the most was how critical people were about how I was slinging him. And so it was my fault. I wasn't doing it right. And I actually remember getting into like a little bit of an internet scuffle later. I think this was when William was a baby, about, you know, if you complain about your back hurting when you're using a sling, basically it's because you're not doing it right. And I was like, you know, here's the thing. I'm on my third big baby. And I'm telling you, at some point, it doesn't feel good anymore to sling. I'll do it for a while, you know, I'll do it if it makes sense. Like if we're out someplace and like, it just makes it easier for me or it's like a quick trip. I was never one of those moms who wanted to lug around the car seat. I always would end up with bruises on my legs and I think that's bad for your back. And it's, you know, I get why people do it every now and then, but for me, it was like, why am I going to take this thing out of my car? Like, why don't I just take the baby out of the car? So I get that it makes a lot of sense to have a carrier. And also people who are like, there's like factions. So I have an Arago, which I loved.
Right.
But there are people who don't believe you should put your baby in anything that spreads their legs out.
Right. Yes.
That's a big thing too.
I kind of started to tune into this like years later, like with the third kid. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's all these factions who believe different things are right. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of money and I got really like obsessed with it for a while, only to realize that I have monster babies and I have tight shoulders. And that combination does not always work for a day of slinging your baby. You know, you're by the time they were a few months old, were like 15 pounds.
Yeah.
So put that with you know, I have, I always carry tension in my shoulders. Like if I go get a massage, that's the place where like, holy crap, like what is this knot? It would start to ache. And then I would start to do that hunched over thing. And it didn't matter how many times I adjusted them. I tried different slings. I know people are at home going, but did you try? No. Yes. I tried that one.
Yeah.
Whatever one you're about to say, did you try? I tried that one. I tried different wrap styles, blah, blah, blah. It just didn't really feel good anymore. The funny thing is with Clara, I just never, like I had a sling, but I think it was packed away. I never found it. And I just never used it. And I think she was the most carried baby of any of them. Because when I stopped worrying about like having to have this accoutrement to carry her in, I just carried her. And then I also had older kids that they carried right. her as well. We never right. even bothered to
and nobody anything. Else that you were probably
right.
carrying.
Right. And nobody else I was carrying. No competition. I didn't have a toddler. At the time, and so the only stroller I ever bought with her was an umbrella stroller, which half the time would hold the stuff and some right. will be carrying yeah. her. So it's just funny to me, like, how much I freaked out about it. Now, don't get me wrong. I think slings are fantastic. I think right. baby carriers are great. Like, I love having little babies close to me. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a very nurturing, warm thing. I love it. I think a lot of times there's no reason to have to deal with these huge stroller systems that right. cost, you know,
right.
hundreds of dollars and are bulky and blah, blah, blah. Love slings, especially for newborns. But it's something that I spent a lot of time freaking out about.
Yeah.
And I listened to other people when they would say, no, your back doesn't hurt.
Well, I was going to say that's like the way bigger issue that you pointed out, which is when somebody else is saying this should work, mm-hmm. this should work for you. And that yeah. can be applied, whether they're saying that completely rudely or just kind of implying it. That, I mean, that happens with everything, right? With sleep training, with breastfeeding, with
yeah. So another example of that, of the this shouldn't, was breastfeeding. With three of my babies, I had terrible nipple pain, and they were older babies. Like, these were, right. Or like subsequent babies. To Jacob, I had none. With the next three, it was terrible, and it was not my latch. Mm-hmm. People would say, it shouldn't
hurt. If you're doing it right, it won't hurt.
Nope. Sorry. It yeah. just hurt. They had really, they were really hungry, large yeah. babies. You know, Isaac was 9 pounds, 12 ounces. William was 8, 9. It hurt a little less with him, actually. And Owen was 10 pounds, 1 ounce.
Ooh.
They came out hungry.
Yeah.
And they had like barracuda mouths.
Yeah, they were cheeseburger.
And so they just kind of did a little wear and tear. It's yeah. fine. I mean, it toughened up, and after a while it was fine. Right. It's worth it. But to be like crying in pain and have someone right. tell you it shouldn't hurt.
Right.
I get why people do it, because it usually shouldn't be excruciating. There should right. be a way around.
Right, and if you catch
it.
A latch problem right. early, you can definitely exactly. minimize that. I right. agree. I think there's some soreness that is inevitable for some people and some babies, even yeah. with the correct latch.
And if you have more sensitive skin, I've even heard like redheads and fairer people are more oh. likely to have it and stuff. It was definitely my experience, and it's just really invalidating to be told that you're wrong.
Yes.
So, and, yeah. and sometimes all you need to know is, you know what? It's going to hurt for a little while, but right. here's a few things you can do to make it better. And if you just stick with it for a week, it's going to get better
right.
or whatever.
And I think having a variety of different people around you, I mean, you've talked about kind of the attachment parenting online groups that you are a part of. And that's, you know, a little bit of a hive mind in one scenario. Or if you're only consulting, say, like the mainstream books and your pediatrician, that's going to be another
right.
belief system. And I think I lucked into kind of having a pretty good variety cross-section of people around me in that first year, which mm-hmm. does really help, because the sooner you can realize that there's many shades of normal, the more confident you get in sort of trusting those instinct, quote unquote instincts. Does that make sense? Like, if you're yeah. only around one opinion set or belief system, it's just really hard to do anything that goes against it, even when it feels right. Whereas if you surround yourself with kind of a variety, it's easier, maybe.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think for me, because so much of this stuff was still so very divided up and kind of underground, really.
Mm.
And I was doing so much of my reaching out on the internet. I was doing, you know, most of my socializing with other moms at that mm-hmm. time was via not even really blogs. This was even before blogs. It was forums and chat rooms. I just sort of wound up, and we can have an article I wrote that we can
mm-hmm.
that we can link to, where
yes.
I fell in with I don't even know. I fell in with a radical group of attachment yeah. parenters, and I'm still friends with a lot of them now, and we've all mellowed out a lot. they're good people. We all just, it was a very toxic environment we created mm-hmm. for ourselves mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. based on the best of intentions.
Right.
Everybody just wanting to do their best, and it just turned into an ugly stew.
Right.
So,
I love
so
it.
Yes, yeah, it is funny to me that slinging sure. would be something that I worried that much about, because now I think they're seen as just kind of like practical items or like right. accessories. But then it was like a lifestyle choice.
Right.
It made a statement about the kind of parent you were.
Right. Right.
And yeah, a lot That's of anxiety. Sad. Okay. What was yours? Other one?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I'm going to do a quick one because we've used up a lot of time. I have a couple more. But this one I think is funny, because this is an example of something that has already, in the very few years that I've been a mom, completely changed in terms of what doctors and pediatricians are recommending. So that's just another point of all this, is that things change, and the things that you try to adhere to when you're trying to stick to the rules change anyway in 10 years. Right. And that is starting solid food. So that's another, I won't even go into it because I wouldn't say it stressed me out at an emotional level. Like I wasn't worried about it, but it was something that I really tried to follow all the rules. And at that time, just a few years ago, the rules were, you know, you start at between 4 to 6 months. I was always at the 6 month end of that. And you do vegetables first and you do one every 3 days or no, you did the cereal. So, which none of my babies ever liked the cereal. Anyway, and you were very careful about, introducing one food at a time, mm-hmm. Waiting 3 days to see a reaction. So now, and you listeners can totally just come at me if I'm wrong, but I believe it is more and more mainstream pediatricians are now saying basically anything is okay except honey. Like, right. As soon as they're ready for something, like anything, there's no stages anymore. Yeah. And I think we're in flux. So I'm painting this with a way broader brush, but in general, and I have a niece who's 9 months and my other baby friends, they're saying, I think the age of starting is, I don't know that that's changed too much, but in terms of how you introduce and being so careful about, what order foods are introduced, it's like, it's all gone to the other.
I feel like the age of starting has definitely gotten older for more doctors. I wouldn't say that's definitely, maybe the AAP hasn't adopted that yet, but I feel like at least from when Jacob was a baby, it was more like, you know, around 4 months of people were doing it earlier and often doctors were recommending to do
right.
it earlier.
And then it was sort of the exclusive breastfeeding
right.
extreme was waiting longer.
Right.
Kind of. And maybe that's become, but you can give babies peanut butter. I mean, peanut butter, they were telling me to wait till two. At one point they were saying to wait till two, which I never did. But we don't have a history of allergies. And obviously peanut allergies are no joke. But it's just so funny to me how quickly that has changed.
Well, and they keep changing their minds about whether early exposure is better or worse. I mean, nobody knows. That's the thing. Right. Nobody knows.
It's amazing. So anyway, that one, I didn't keep myself up at night, but I did try very hard to stick to those staged introduction. And again, because I can get bogged down in details, it was like, okay, it has to be 3 days of the same type of food. And let's see, do we have enough peaches to last 3 days? And if not, can I try green beans? Like, it just is so silly. And now it's like, throw food at them.
Yeah. Just give them something. That's so funny. And when Jacob was a baby, you know, this is like, back in the middle ages, they were still recommending rice cereal. I mean, is that even a thing anymore?
Well, last year, Lager was a baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mixed
I mean, that was that was the thing you were supposed to feed your baby was rice cereal.
Yeah.
And babies don't want to eat that, especially when they're 4 months old. They don't want to eat crap. They can't even sit up yet.
They can't sit up. So. I know. No, that's not, I don't think that, I mean, I think that is still, but it's probably getting less. So
there's not really a whole lot of nutrition in it.
Grandmas now, but if you are a new mom with an early solid feeder, just know that whatever rules they're telling you, you know, barring major family history of allergies, your kid's probably gonna be okay.
Yeah,
I'm glad that they're now just saying let them eat what they'll eat.
Well, and also I think at the time they were really big on it when Jacob was little, they were really big on iron supplementation if you weren't breastfeeding because there's not iron in breast milk, which I always thought, well, if it's not there and you know nature made it, probably a reason for that. But then they would want you to use supplement. They would want you to use cereals that had that were enriched in some way.
Right.
And I just think when you're just eating like one thing as like a huge part of an infant's meal that's not a complete food, like not breast milk or not formula, it can't just be rice cereal. There's nothing in it.
Right.
It's rice. So yeah, I definitely was way more afraid about that with the first.
Right.
With William, he was like 5 months old. I was planning on holding off on solids till he was six. Mm-hmm. And I was holding him in my lap eating like Thanksgiving dinner. And I looked down and he was eating it. Like mashing like potatoes and turkey in his face. And I thought, well,
I guess we're starting solid
foods.
What better day
now. So get some interesting diapers, but
that's awesome. Yeah. That's one I think I got way better at with each progressive kid. Other things like the sleep one, I don't feel like I ever really relaxed, but that one definitely, it's like a first kid. You spend the first few weeks and months getting down the bottle or the breast.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you have to, then there's this whole new system. It was very stressful.
Well, and it's a big thing. I mean, when you have a baby and all they do is sleep, eat, and poop.
Yeah.
I mean, each of those things is pretty important.
Right.
And so being able to feed your kid is a big deal. I think we just kind of realized that they can thrive and eat a lot of different things. And that, and I think that the changing recommendations is probably one of the most eye-opening things. Like everything is always in flux.
And I had always heard that this was the first one to have such a big swing. I mean, it would be almost the equivalent of sleeping on your back, sleeping on your stomach. Like this seems like such a big flip in the amount of time that I have been a parent. So if someone came to me and asked about introducing solid foods to your baby, what I did would have been completely opposite, basically, in the span of 8 years, 7 years.
Well, it's kind of, it's frustrating, but it's a little reassuring too, right?
I do think ultimately it's a great thing to know that whatever you're clinging to may or may not stick. So if it doesn't feel right, that's as good a reason.
Just do what you want and wait a little bit.
Yeah. So I have a couple of resources I wanted to bring up since we're dating ourselves a little bit with some of these. It's been a few years.
I don't even want to tell you the last parenting book I read that has any, because it'll make me seem like I'm ancient.
So don't ask us for advice, obviously. Yeah. No, but Rookie Moms are a couple of our blogger friends at rookiemoms.com, correct? It is a .com. And Heather and Whitney have a great resource site. I always recommend that to new moms, and on everything, really practical stuff and also just things to make you feel better in those new mom years. And another really fun thing to read is over at Cup of Joe, Joanna Goddard's blog, and she does a series on motherhood around the world. And it's fascinating because one of the things that I think helps in all of these things we're talking about when you're wondering about doing it right is reading about how people do it all over the world. And I'm not saying you throw out your books and start parenting like a Danish mother or whatever, but I personally think it's fascinating to read the differences culturally in having babies. And this series is really well done. So they're always, let's see, are they interviews or essay? I think they're kind of interview style where they answer similar questions. And so she's had posts with mothers all around the world. A lot of them are expats, so they maybe have had a Western upbringing but are now raising babies and children in another country, everywhere, all around the world. And it's such a great way to get perspective on, you know, what's the same and what's different and what some of these things, you know, mean in the grander scheme. And it's really interesting reading. So I'll link to both those things. Do you does anything come to mind for
Sarah,
you?
Sarah, have you seen the movie Babies?
Yes.
I watched that with the kids. It was like one of the most fun family movie nights we ever had.
And I actually saw that in the theater, and it was in that phase of time where I think it was the only thing. I went with my mom, and I think I was pregnant with my second, or maybe
that sounds about right.
I don't know when. It was one of the only times I went to the theater in like a 5-year span was to see a documentary about babies because I was living.
It was. We all laughed. I mean, it was so funny and charming. But also it's just like that. I mean, you see these four different babies being raised in four different cultures. And I want to say the one that was it Thailand? Where was the ones? You remember the ones where the mom and dad jump on the motorcycle with the newborn and the toddler?
Yes.
And they all just ride away on this motorcycle after the baby's been like playing with goats all morning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and then just, almost got stuck.
Oh, no, they're Mongolian, I think. I don't remember. Anyway,
I think Mongolia sounds right.
Yeah.
Remember you almost got stepped on by the cow or the horse or something? You're coming like,
Yeah.
Baby.
And there was these two little babies, like toddler sized babies, that I want to say, I think they were in some African country and they were like messing with each other. So like one of them had a toy, but the toy was like a gourd or something. And the other one wanted it and was like kept stealing it when the other one's back was turned. And they were just, it was just so cute. And it was like, it just gave you this context that like we all parent differently, but babies are all the same.
Yes.
They all do exactly the same. Like these two little brothers were just messing with each other. And then the smaller one starts crying because he can't get the gourd away from his brother. And I mean, it was fascinating. And I think that is like family. I might watch it again, actually.
Yeah, that is. I'd love to see it again. Yeah,
with the kid. Like we watched it with all of our kids and we all really enjoyed it. So
That's a great one. We'll link to that. We'll link to that too. Oh my gosh, this has been so fun. I feel
this
like
has been really
wrap
fun.
Up. I want to say though, I feel like there's a potential part two in here, especially if we hear from our listeners. So more experienced mom listeners, I would love to hear from you at the momhour.com. You can leave a comment on this post or email us.
And we really covered like newborns. I did at least.
Yes.
So we could definitely cover like a more toddlery.
Yeah, because I feel like if those of you out there who are like us and you're past the intense early years, share some more things that you stressed out over and maybe didn't need to, we really could do a part two. We could read some of your responses. And then new moms, please do email us and let us know what you're thinking about and what you're facing and if this helped or if we just made you worry about more things. Oh my gosh, I hope we didn't do that.
I hope not, because I think the message here is we did it like a lot of different ways and you know, it all turned out pretty good. So,
so you can always email us hello@themomhour.com and, leave a comment on the post for these show notes, which are at themomhour.com episode 19. Anything else you have to wrap up?
I think that's it. We'll be back next week because we are back to our weekly schedule now. So
yes. And we'll be back with episode 20. That sounds official.
Yes, it sure does. We'll do something special.
All right. Thanks everybody.
Yep. Have a good one.